Welcome to the Parent Equation Podcast with me, Aisha Murray. This podcast series is full of inspiring stories from working parents who are passionate about designing a life that works for them and their families. Working parents like you who want a purposeful, rewarding career alongside a balanced family life. Today, I'm joined by Charlotte Speak. Charlotte is the founder of Power of the Parent, which I'm very excited to be talking about today. So thank you for joining me, Charlotte.
Thank you for having me.
So the first, I think, obvious question for me is your company name, Power of the Parent, is powerful and obviously speaks volumes about being a parent, working parent. From my point of view, I quite often, especially as a working parent, feel quite powerless. I suppose because of the juggle, the guilt, the, you know, sort of the constant conflict between trying to be a good mum and a good parent. So from your point of view and with your company name in mind, where does power come from, do you think, as a parent and especially as a working parent?
Yeah, I think it can definitely feel a little bit incongruous at times. But I think for me, where the name came from was when I was initially setting up, I kind of reflected back about how I felt when I became a parent in the workplace. And at a time where I felt like really vulnerable, like really, really vulnerable, I was questioning my worth, the value that I added to the workplace, if I could still do my job. I was all of those just, you know, utterly delightful cliches that are cliches for a reason. But alongside all of that, I also felt like I had even more of a reason to need to earn my salary, to want to be able to show up, that my empathy definitely had grown. I know that doesn't for everybody when they have children, but it definitely triggered something in me. And I think I saw the world through a very different lens to what I ever had before. And I think that's when I thought, actually, you still add heaps of value to the workplace. You are I discovered and rediscovered strengths that had been buried for a long time, because, you know, what I had a change in values, I think, not you know, a gigantic overhaul or anything, but there were definitely a couple of things that came to the forefront that probably I hadn't given that much airtime to before. And therefore, the way that I was showing up in the workplace, yes, I was managing the juggle. Yes, I was incredibly tired. I did feel torn in lots of different directions. But I also came at life with a very different and new perspective to me. And I think what that helped was how I then led my team, how I interacted with other people. I was able to probably be a little bit calmer, actually, I think, because I saw things, you know, in a different context than I perhaps had prior to having, at the time, my eldest daughter. And that for me felt powerful. Like I felt empowered even when I also felt a bit rubbish. And I think that's one of the things that I have to tell myself a lot. And I also talk a lot to clients and on whatever platform I'm wittering on about the fact that, you know, two seemingly opposite things can happen at the same time. And all those emotions can run side by side and be totally true. You can feel powerless and powerful at the same time. And I think that for me is where Power of the Parent came from, because I think brilliant things can happen in the world of work when employers have parents in the workplace on their side.
Yeah, and it sounds like then, do you think from your point of view, before you had kids, do you think you were conforming to a expected persona maybe at work? And then when you had children, you almost gave yourself permission to, I suppose, redefine yourself and be a bit kinder on yourself and let those values actually shine through. And perhaps you've been suppressing those values up till then.
Yes, 100%. It's definitely been a retrospective thing, but I realize how much I was playing a corporate game. And you know, the definition of success in the corporate world that I was in was very much about how quickly can you get to the top and how many people can you tread on getting there. And it was not, I think I lived a long time trying to fit in and be something that I probably wasn't, or that I told myself that I was, and I believed that I was, because it to be blunt about it, it served me really well. You know, I did do really well. I did get promotions. I mean, I didn't, you know, hit extremely lofty heights or anything like that, but I had a good reputation. I was generally quite nice with people, I think. I seemed to get on with everybody and have a way of engaging and working with other people. But I would also celebrate things like presenteeism, and I would celebrate the long hours and people having to go above and beyond. When, like, why did they have to go above and beyond? If their job was designed properly, none of the stuff needed to happen. So I think that part in particular, what I celebrated and what I thought success was, is what shifted for me. And it's a question that I have consistently asked of myself on a daily basis, and also anybody that I work with, friends, family, literally anybody, you know, what is your definition of success? And it's not always as clinical as that, because, you know, I don't go for a brew with a friend and be like, so tell me about your definition of success. But I think you start to spot it in people, I think, that they'll be talking about what they do want or what they should want or don't want, or any which way of cutting it, about what they need from life. And you can so often hear other people's view in there and not their own, and because you can see that they're just not connected to what they're going after. And I think, you know, it is, in lots of instances, it's a real privilege to be able to go after your version of success. And there are lots of things that make it easier for some of us than others to be able to go after our definition of success. So I don't say it and take it for granted at all. But I think the more that we can push and the more we can connect to what is important to us, the more likely we are to show up. If I take it from a workplace context, we're going to show up and feel engaged. We're going to show up and want to do a good job. And actually, we won't have to do the really long hours, because we'll be, you know, efficient. We'll be getting things done and connecting with the stuff that's important to us, so that, you know, the distractions are limited or less, and it kind of just then naturally flows.
And there's definitely, I think, this pressure, I think, on women still, and especially when obviously talking about parents, working women, that in order to be successful in a workplace, you have to be earning a certain amount of money or have a certain title. And yes, I'm not talking about anything to the cost of living, and obviously we all need to earn now a minimum amount of money to just live. But aside from that, there's this pressure that I certainly felt, that if you're not saying, I earn this much money, or I now have this job title, you weren't successful. And in fact, I went to an event a few weeks before Christmas, sort of business networking day type thing. And one of the speakers said, you need to write down a figure, income figure for 2023. What do you want to earn in 2023 as small business owners? So I wrote down a number, which is not particularly high, but it's enough for me to feel like my business is successful. And the lady next to me looked over at my shoulder and said, oh, is that all? You should at least triple that. And I said, well, I don't need to. I also don't want to feel pressure that my success definition is, but in this instance, she was asking me to put six figures down on a piece of paper. But I felt pressured that, oh, why was I putting that number down? You know, and it's all of those external influences, and, you know, you should be, you know, as a successful independent female business owner, you should be earning as much money. It's like, I don't need to, actually. But I suppose it's finding confidence, isn't it, to say no to things like that, and say, actually, I'm happy. I know what makes me successful.
Yeah, yes. I mean, how judgy was that person? I completely agree with you. I think there's a difference, isn't there, between we have a figure that we have to earn, or that we really need to earn to be able to sustain our lifestyles. But then, and you know, hopefully that's something that we can achieve. But then there's also this other school of thought, this group of people who associate success with the amount of money that they're making. And I really, really struggled with that when I first set up, because I felt like I was in this very noisy world of probably the kind of like that online business coach type mentality of people who were posting on different social media platforms talking about, you know, 20K launches and get yourself to a consistent 5K month or 10K month and all this kind of stuff. And I I find it really quite predatory in some ways for some of the work that is out there, because they are targeting a lot of women primarily. And I mean, I have no stats to back that up, so maybe that's wildly unfair. But if you look at their narrative and the copy that they use and the lifestyle that they start to sell, I find it really quite icky. And I like, what, why, like, who picks the figure of a 5k month or a 10k month, and whose definition of success is that? And if you don't measure up to somebody else's definition of success, you then feel a failure. But actually, why are you? Because if you've achieved what you want to achieve, then that's your definition of success, and you've got there and you've done it. So I really struggle with it, and I, as much as I possibly can, I will always go against the grain of that particular narrative of, you know, just go after more, because it's not always good.
No, and it goes back to your point about power, empowering, et cetera, that we spend so much time and energy and commitment, again, as parents, working to, I suppose, stay in our lane, to be strong, to do what we feel is right, to try not to feel guilty about whether we're good parents or good workers or whatever. So we spend a lot of energy trying to keep that up, to then have it is external pressures of, oh, and you also should be earning this much money, also should be doing this, it should be doing that. It's trying to keep that imposter syndrome at bay is so hard anyway. And those kind of things add an extra layer of pressure for us to sort of fight against. So I think all of this, back to that word power, is keeping ourselves really empowered to just maintain what we feel is right for us, for our families, for our employment, etc.
Yes, absolutely.
And then how did your working parent journey sort of go or start? So when you went from, as you said, this kind of sort of high pressure, I suppose, corporate environment, and your kids came along and your values changed, your perceptions changed, etc. What happened then to take you from corporate into self-employment?
I think there are a lot of workplaces that are not set up for working parents to thrive, let alone survive. Or the other way around. And there was an opportunity for me to part ways with my employer after my second maternity leave. And I took it because... Of a variety of different reasons. But I think, you know, at the heart of it for me, it felt like the right decision for our family, so that I could work in a way that enabled us to have a bit more flexibility. So I was very definitely the flex point in the family for a good number of years when I first set up. And I think I felt like there was a real opportunity for me to be able to go and put my work where my mouth was. You know, I'd been having various conversations about the world of work for parents and how things needed to change and shift and all of that stuff. And it felt like, I guess, the right time. And it was really scary because I went from very much a standing start. So there was no... There was no side hustle. There was no business plan. And I know that sometimes even when you've got those side hustles and those business plans, it's still not easy at all. But I really went into it quite cold other than the passion. But, you know, passion projects don't always stack up financially. So when I transitioned out of corporate world, my first few months, my intention was to work directly with parents, with individuals, and I had my coaching qualification and thought, right, I'll do something with that, and wanted to make as much as I possibly could. So, but my background is as a strengths practitioner, so I wanted to use the strengths side of things, because I think you can forget what you do and how you do your job, but I think you can reconnect with who you are when you really look at, you know, what energizes you, what do you love doing, what keeps you focused and attention, all of those kinds of things. And I was finding that both for myself, and I suppose I was probably my own first client, and for other people, when I started looking at the difference between strengths and skills and competencies, they're felt to be a really natural fit for helping people return to the workplace. And my returns had been pretty awful. There were some glimmers of hope, but certainly in those like very early days and weeks and in the run up to returning, my experiences just were really quite poor. And then when I became a parent in the workplace, and I had a long time in the workplace after I'd had my eldest, that was really, really challenging, because I knew that I was getting overlooked for promotions. And then when I did get a promotion, I then experienced discrimination when I was pregnant with my second daughter. So I was kind of coming off the back of this I was quite angry. And I say that now knowing probably how much toxicity was spewing out of me when I first set up, because the injustice of it all felt really, that was like a firepower. But I think that also kept me blind to how to run that as a business. So this, you know, this idea of things like 5K months were so far in the distance and alien to me. I was like, how on earth do you ever get to that? So my intention was to work directly with individuals, and that just completely flopped and failed for me. It wasn't a model that I took naturally to. I didn't really have a grasp on marketing. I used social media a lot, but not with, again, in hindsight, not with the right intention, or not with any of me. I think I thought there was a formula to follow, and that involved posting a couple of times a day and mentioning that I was a coach and that kind of stuff. And actually, I mean, there's probably some of that in the nuts and bolts, but you know, realistically, people just want to get to know you. They want to know who you are. Yeah. And not everybody's going to want to work with you, and that's absolutely fine. And I think it took me a really long time to separate, because it was me and I am my brand. It took me a long time to separate the no's from me personally to me as the business. So I did a lot of associate work in the first sort of 9 to 12 months of setting up. And some of that was related to supporting parents in the workplace, but actually most of it wasn't. A lot of it was, my background is in learning and development and talent development. So I did a lot of associate work based around that, which some of it interested me. Some of it was literally just, I need to pay bills. So how do I get the money kind of thing? And I also eroded a lot of my self-worth, because when I was doing stuff to support parents, I offered my services a lot of the time for free, which I couldn't really afford to do. And I, like, from a mental perspective, really shouldn't have done, because it really did make me think, well, you know, you can't possibly charge for this going forward then, can you? But I have compassion and empathy as some of my biggest energizing strengths, and they were massively operating in overdrive. And I think because I think they were probably things that were so important to me, but I probably had suppressed them a little bit when I was in corporate world. It felt like they had this new playground and they just wanted to just go out all the time and be like, come on, let's just go and help the world. So I had a lot of learnings to do. So my transition, I don't know if this answers your question, but my transition from corporate into self-employed and running Power of the Parent was one heck of a real bumpy ride. And one that I just, when I look back now, I think, oh my goodness, like that was pretty rubbish at times. I wouldn't do it any differently. I know that might sound like really weird because there were a lot of bumps, but I actually don't think I would, because I'm not sure I'd have been ready then for what I've got now. And I'm so grateful. There are some instances that I'd love to erase, but overall, that kind of first sort of 18 months when I was finding my feet, I am actually hugely grateful for.
And everything we do, whether it's, you know, I suppose, yeah, some things we can erase, but generally everything we do contributes in some way to our learning and our development and the people we are and the companies we run and all those kind of things. So everything you went through has shaped you and your business into what it is today and taken you on this particular path. Whereas if you'd done things differently, maybe Power of the Parent wouldn't be Power of the Parent. It could be something quite different, potentially.
Yeah.
And then you talked obviously about strengths then, that being your background. And something I know that I talk about a lot and other coaches talk about a lot is that it's our strengths that we should be focusing and exploiting and developing. And this, I suppose, this idea of strengths and weaknesses certainly doesn't sit well with me, because weakness implies, therefore, it's something that's that shouldn't be a part of you. And actually, it just is. And it's fine to have a weakness or something that's not quite as strong as something else. So where do you, and you said that your strengths kind of came out in overdrive. Mm-hmm. Do you think we can, do you think our strengths can, I suppose, overshadow other areas? And is there an argument that we should be not suppressing our strengths, but keeping them in check at any point?
Yes, I think so. It would be my short answer. I think there's a lot of nuance to it, I think, the strengths-based conversation. And I'm lucky enough to have been surrounded by a lot of leading experts in strengths in the way that my strengths approach has been developed. And I think there are lots of different schools of thought. I think one of the things that we have to get better at is describing the strengths-based approach and making sure that people know that it has nothing to do with toxic positivity. Because, you know, certainly from my experiences and the people that I've worked with, there isn't a world where strengths in overdrive or weaknesses or energy drainers, whatever language you want to use, call them, there isn't a world where they don't exist, because you're not this, you know, a human that is formed to love everything. And actually, we don't want to be humans that love everything and are great at everything. That would be incredibly boring and actually probably burnout mode for most of us. But I think there are instances where our strengths become overplayed, and that has caused me a problem in the past. It continues to cause me problems now. I'm not this finished article that never therefore has strengths in overdrive, because I'm aware of it. It still happens. It's just the way that I face into them probably happens a little bit quicker than it did, say, 10 years ago. I think language does matter, but I think it's also very unique to each of us. So I will work with people who are not comfortable using the word weakness, for example, but they are happy saying an energy drainer or a weaker area, or, you know, something a little bit more with a bit more neutrality. I think you call it whatever you want. I think the bottom line is that having that insight into yourself about when you're at your best, where you add value, what you really love doing, compared to the stuff that doesn't turn you on, that is going to really leave you feeling, you know, disengaged in its extreme and not feeling particularly in tune with who you are. I think it is really important that we know what those are as well, because they're the things, when they operate together, they're the things that help us make empowered decisions. They're the things that help us look for new roles or new clients, or it can also help shape how we spend our time, our time away from the workplace. I think I really love strengths because it's a whole person approach, and it doesn't just have to be, there are lots of, you know, things like psychometrics out there that will look at who you are in the workplace. I think strengths is a much more holistic way to look at things, because you can see, okay, things might manifest differently in the workplace versus at home for people, but fundamentally your drivers are who you are, regardless of where you are geographically. So I think it's a really brilliant way to help you stay connected with what's important to you and the things that ultimately switch you off and therefore might leave you feeling a bit rubbish.
And then from your perspective, where do values sit in relation to strengths in your world?
They are holding hands, very much holding hands. And I think they're so intrinsically linked that sometimes people will struggle to define their strengths. And I think if they've got a grasp on their values, then you can say, right, let's start with your values and look at how do they play out, because that they're so interconnected, and vice versa. Some people might really struggle to decipher their values, but if you start to talk to them about, well, what do you really love doing? What engages you? That's that kind of conversation. You can then begin to pick out their values if you needed to. So I think they're incredibly sisters or brothers, or they're definitely not cousins, they're much closer than that. So I think, yeah, very, very close by each other. And I think one, you know, they coexist.
Yeah, because part of feeling like you have purpose and you are comfortable in your own skin and you're a good parent and you're a good employee and you're a good wife, mother, spouse, partner, whatever, is understanding those values and those strengths, and then ideally living every day aligned to those. But as you've said, it's also appreciating that if things aren't going your way, or if something or a scenario is jarring with those values or not exploiting the strengths, that's okay too. But it's the self-awareness of those and thinking about how they can, not negativity, but how can that sort of that jarring actually serve me? What's it telling me about the situation? Yeah. Rather than, you know, this must be bad, I should run away from this. Actually, no, I won't run away from it. I'll understand why it's happening and what do I need to take from it. So when it comes again to your work and power of the parent and working with employees and employers, what do you see in the people you work with when it comes to understanding their strengths and values? What are kind of themes or challenges that people come up against the most?
The ones that they come up against, I would say it's when they feel like their values have become incongruous with their employer. And that, you know, there's some probably very obvious ones that would be the most common themes and topics for that when you become a parent. So the feeling of being pulled in a million different directions, that some of what you described at the beginning of this about, you know, I want to feel like I'm being a good parent but also a good a good coworker or employee, and sometimes because of the way that the world of work is structured, that looks like that can't coexist. And I think that's fact in some instances. I don't think it is in every case, but I think in some worlds, in some businesses, it very definitely is an issue. And that can feel so hard because it's like, well, what do you prioritize? Do you prioritize the thing that's paying your bills, or do you prioritize the things that they're your family and they're your children who need you? And regardless of what stage you're at, and also you as a person, it's ultimately your strengths and values that are being challenged. And often, I remember when I kind of first started with this approach with coaching, that you could, I don't know, maybe like every other coachee that I was working with, there was some sort of challenge on their values being, you know, trodden on, that was what we were working through at the heart of it. So however else it manifested, at the core of the issue, it was really an issue around their values being challenged in a really quite a negative way. So I think, yeah, anything that challenges you to think, can I really show up as a parent and as a great employee, are the things, and there'll be lots of different offshoots for that for each of us, but sometimes that could be things like how that a value around family and what that means to them. It can sometimes be about how do you leave somebody feeling empowered, or if you've got any values around kind of developing others. So I remember working with somebody who had there was some values going on there and some strengths around developing other people, and she had got, when she returned to work, she was working 4 days, and there was this one particular meeting on her day when she was with her child that her boss was putting loads of pressure on her to dial into, because she was like, you know, you've got to be at it, you're the team lead, it's only, I think it was like half an hour or something, it's only half an hour, you can do that, can't you? And she was like, well actually no, I can't, because if I don't do it, then my deputy can actually be the one that represents the team at it, and they get then really some great exposure to the leadership team. It doesn't have to be me. I have no special, and it wasn't like a highly technical meeting that only she could answer the questions for. This person who was like her number two could absolutely go and do a brilliant job. And the more the conversation went down the route of, it has to be you, it can't possibly be anybody else, she was like, but that completely divorces my reality from what I believe. And I don't believe that I'm the only person that can have these conversations and that I'm the only person that can go into these meetings. And so that, you know, that challenged her own self-worth, but it was really challenging her values as well. So, yeah, I think there are lots, there would be lots of examples, but particularly the ones where you are being asked to split yourself in two and almost show up as two different people that are at the core of the issues there.
And that example actually it's an example where the pushback from your client there wasn't that it was the time that was an issue, and it was obviously she shouldn't be going against her boundaries anyway, but it wasn't about her saying I can't make the time. It was her saying this doesn't align to my values of wanting someone else to actually have an opportunity to develop themselves. And it's more about that. And I think maybe, again, as our default position as working parents who are being challenged or having our boundaries challenged is a practical default position. So, you know, it's officially my day off, so I don't need to be dialing in, or I need to leave at a certain time to pick up the kids from school, etc. It becomes quite a sort of time management view. Whereas actually, to your point, what is sitting behind that? It's not always just about time management. It's about someone else could get an opportunity, or it's about actually hundreds of different things, but values-based rather than logistics-based.
Yes, absolutely.
And then when you talk about working with employers as your main focus now, are you seeing, and I'm hoping the answer is yes, are you seeing a shift in the last few years in how employers are not treating individuals, but how they are, I suppose, empathising better and supporting working parents better?
Why, yes, I am.
Thank God for that.
Yes, I genuinely am. I would say there is a real hive of genuine activity that people want to make strategic change here. I think there are still a lot of people who sit in the transactional. So they want to do the workshops, they want to be seen to be doing the right thing, but probably don't have some of the infrastructure and the culture to back it up. And then there are still some organizations that are just, you know, doing nothing. But I would definitely say they're not the lead anymore. And certainly when I first set up, that was, and most people would go, oh, I've never heard of anybody that does anything like you do. And you still get that from time to time, but not in the same way and not in a derogatory way. I definitely found in the beginning it was a bit like, you've made a job out of that. Whereas now it's a bit more like, oh, this sounds great. And, you know, we really want to do something. So I think a lot of what's changed, the pandemic has definitely triggered a lot of things for people. I mean, that could be the end of that sentence, couldn't it? It's just triggered a lot. But certainly from an employer perspective and how they're supporting parents, I think what came into fruition very quickly was the conversation around things like parental burnout. How do you help people manage boundaries when they are living and working in the same location? And if they were having to go out onto the front line, but also had a family to juggle, then, you know, how do you realistically support those people? And I think what I'm beginning to see, and I'm very hopeful of, is that there is an acceptance that there is no silver bullet. There is no you follow this 5-point plan and everything will fall into place, which that is historically, I think, what we've approached it as. And I think, you know, people like me have tried to sell as, you know, we've got this formula and it works, and then you'll have this amazingly engaged workforce. But actually, it doesn't really work like that. There are so many other things at play, whether that be the industry that somebody's in, or the size of business, or who you've got in your employee base, that we are way, way more aware now of the things that people might be experiencing. And ultimately supporting parents in the workplace, this is the other shift that I'm seeing. Not everything is about returners anymore, which is great. And I say that as somebody who, that is what I set up to do. Originally, it was all returner stuff. But I think probably in the last sort of 3 years, what has come into a sharp focus is that that is one tiny part of the puzzle, and it's a really important part of the puzzle. And it's often the thing that, because it's very tangible and you can see it, and it fits quite neatly in a way, because it's a moment in time, it's not neat around the edges. So if you haven't engaged people before they've gone on parental leave, or if they have no idea what a career could look like after having come back and after getting through those initial weeks and months of returning to the workplace, you're going to come a cropper anyway. So you can throw all the returner workshops and coaching you want at somebody, but they're still going to be a flight risk, because if you haven't got, you know, the right stuff there, everything from how your line managers are operating to your policies, and everything that goes in between, then you're throwing your money away a little bit. So that is definitely something that I'm seeing a step change in, and I'm really, really hopeful about that, because I think, you know, no longer is it just about, you know, one moment in time. It is about seeing that whole cycle that somebody could go through. And if you take an example of somebody who might go through, let's say, fertility treatment in the workplace, that it, from a very, very early stage, you need to support and work with that person. And I don't think that's ever been that hasn't been in like the list of top three or four things that you might need to consider for somebody in the workplace. And that is a very real conversation that's happening now, thank goodness. So yeah, I think there's a lot more empathy. I think there's a lot more reality, because we've seen into people's worlds in a very different space. And of course, some people are forgetting and they're going back to how they were operating pre-pandemic, but not everybody. And it doesn't need to take a pandemic to do this, and to keep us back on the right track. So I think, yeah, I'm very hopeful, and I'm definitely seeing a big shift in the way that employers are supporting parents.
I think, because we come at it from those complementary angles, where I still very much work one-to-one with individuals, and you have more of a corporate or employer view than I have, certainly. And certainly with my clients, the shift that I've seen is that it's absolutely, actually, I think 1% of my clients are probably returner based. Most of them have young children, so primary school age children, and are just opening their eyes to actually what the potential of their lives and careers might be now that they're getting a bit more headspace and they've come out of the toddler phase where everything's kind of all consuming. So it's actually a bit later into their employment. They've probably been back at work for a few years. So again, the relationship with their employer is vital, because suddenly they open their eyes and go, right, I'm ready to do something. Oh, hold on a minute, I've not been supported for the last 4 years. Or I have by my employer, so that's going to change things. And also, as we both know, we have an amazing mutual network of, I suppose, people supporting parents in very different ways, but increasingly working fathers coming into that equation, which is amazing. So I get a lot more working fathers coming through for coaching now. And obviously we have a lot of mutual connections like Elliot, et cetera, sort of great voices in the working father space. So allowing that conversation to happen much more openly. So I think from my perspective is, of course, the employers need to step up and be doing as much as they can and more, but also it's how can we give parents a voice to also say, this is not working for me anymore. And I've got the power to challenge and to confront and to, challenge the status quo, really, and say, this doesn't work for me anymore. This is what I need.
Yeah. Oh, hugely. I think that line that I often see, maybe it's just because that's what's in my head, but nobody will have your back like you will, is something that we've got to channel, haven't we, as parents in the workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. And just people in life, I think.
Well, life.
Generally, just life in general. It's how can we put ourselves first? And I think everyone should be thinking about that anyway, but kids or no kids, is how do you put yourself, your own needs first, not in a selfish way, but in a sort of self-care way. But as parents, where everybody needs you, so, you know, especially your younger children, well, not just younger children, any children, your children need you all the time. Your family needs you, your work needs you, et cetera. It's very, very easy for your needs to fall off that list very quickly. So how can we keep focus on ourselves primarily, so we can be the best we can be and the strongest we can be and all those sort of those positive words. But it's tough, as you say. It's not, you know, life is what life is, and it'd be great to sort of paint this rose-tinted view of we're having all these great conversations, and but there's still a long way to go, I think.
Yes, I agree with you.
So Charlotte, thank you so much for coming on today. It's I love having these conversations anyway, but having a different perspective or your own perspective is always really, really useful for people listening. And if anyone wants to find out more about you or the power of the parent, where's the best place to find you?
I hang out quite a bit on LinkedIn, so you can come and find me on there, just Charlotte Speak, or there is a Power of the Parent LinkedIn page as well. You can find me on Instagram, which is at Power of the Parent, and there's dots in between each of the words, or there's my website, which is powerofthe parent.com, but with dashes in between each of the words. But essentially probably LinkedIn is the best place, and then there'll be all sorts of things that I'm posting on there.
Perfect. So thank you so much, Charlotte, and best of luck with the rest of the whatever Power of the Parent evolves into, because there's plenty of places it could go, and it's much, much needed. So thank you so much for coming on and sharing today.
Thank you so much for having me.
To work with me, find out more at aishamari.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, or check out my free resources and quizzes at aishamari.com/resources.